Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a cool, refreshing glass of ginger ale. Every week at this time, Canada Dry invites you to bombard a board of four experts with the toughest questions you can think of. You may submit from 1 to 3 questions with the correct answers. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. And if your question stumps our board of experts, you not only get $10 more, but in addition, you receive a complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Mind you, this is only if your question stumps our board of experts. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, these questions haven't been seen in advance by any of the experts. And that, Information Please, is completely unprogrammed. Now may I introduce our quartet. The old reliable trio is back in full force. Franklin P. Adams, the long-memoried conductor of the Conning Tower, which appears in the New York Post. Oscar Levant, musical authority, composer, and pianist. And John Kieran, sports expert and general repository of knowledge. We feel a special pleasure in introducing as our guest of honor this evening one of America's most distinguished poets and biographers, Carl Sandburg, whose four-volume study of the last year of Abraham Lincoln will shortly be available, in my opinion, will probably mark a milestone in American biography. Now remember, for each question that's missed, Canada Dry rings up $10, and that's paid out to the sender, plus $5 for the use of the question, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Gentlemen, we're off. I shall begin with the following question. What notorious living American author was thrown out on account of his ignorance of arithmetic when he tried to break into the West Point Military Academy? Mr. Sandberg?
Should I answer me or give my name?
Oh, I think you ought to give us your whole name, Mr. Sandberg, so we can mark it down for the record. Was it really you that was thrown out of the West Point Military Academy?
In 1899.
Long time ago. You've learned arithmetic since then?
I haven't learned arithmetic, and I have forgotten things that I knew then. I hope they don't come up tonight.
You sound as if you belong precisely on this program, Mr. Sandberg. Well, I'll ask you to remember just a single number, the number 10. That's what we're trying this evening, not to lose. $10. Now, you get that, Mr. Sandberg. Very good. That was an off-the-record question just put in to make Mr. Sandberg uneasy. The following question comes from Julia Jean Hoops of Washington, D.C. Where do the following lines occur? The first is, lovely line, boop, boop, diddum, daddum, wadum, chew. Mr. Levant.
It's taken from the Chinese. Three little fishies.
Little fishies. From the Chinese. That's right. You couldn't give us any more of those lines, Mr. Levant.
I think sincerely you would not like me to give you any more lines.
Yes, I would. You mustn't quarrel with me that way. Can you really give us a little more?
I can hardly give you what you just gave me.
Well, you can say those things three times. Boop, boop, diddum, daddum, waddum, chew. And then you say, and they fam, all over the dam. Mr. Levant, it's off the air now.
It's off the elbow.
I mean, generally, they've got on to something else now, haven't they?
I think they have a new vogue.
Yeah, what is it?
I don't know. I don't listen to the air anymore.
Don't listen to the air anymore.
My request.
Now, here's a question that doesn't involve your knowledge of the air. Where does this line occur? Listen carefully. Hey, non, nonny. Nonny, hey, nonny. Mr. Keir Adams.
It's in Shakespeare.
It is in Shakespeare. Now, can you localize it?
Well, it might be in As You Like It. Mm-hmm.
I suppose it weren't.
Then I'd lose.
I thought it was As You Like It.
Shakespeare is correct enough, Mr. Adams, but I'll ask you to be a little more definite. Mr. Levant, did you know?
I thought it was As You Like It. I know where Hey, Nonny, Nonny, Hot Shot Shot comes from.
It comes from Shakespeare, too.
Yeah, but the first modern usage was in Of Thee I Sing by Ira Gershwin.
Very good, but that's not what I'm asking. Actually, the line, hey, nun, nonny, hey, nonny, comes from the song by Ophelia.
Mr. Hamlet.
It's in Hamlet, yes. That's right. They bore him barefaced on the bier, she sings. Hey, nun, nonny, hey, nonny, and in his grave rained many a tear, and so forth. Don't know whether I should let that go, Mr. Adams. Do you think I should give you the $10 or me the $10?
No, I wouldn't give anybody.
don't... Well, I have to give it to Miss Hoops. How about this one? E-I-E-I-O. Where does that line come from? Mr. Sheriff.
Old MacDonald had a farm. E-I-E-I-O.
Very good. That's right.
How did you know that?
Is that in your sand, in your book, Mr. Sandberg?
That isn't in the sandbag.
It isn't in the sandbag at all, or in the sandbag? E-I-E-I-O is from the old song, Old MacDonald Had a Farm. That gives us 2 out of 3, not quite enough, so that $10 plus 24 volumes of the encyclopedia go out to Miss Hoops. See what you can do on this one, gentlemen. This comes from Miss Mildred Knowles of Waltham, Massachusetts. Describe the change in the physical appearance of each of the following and tell who or what caused it. I'm going to name 3 characters. The first is the Happy Hypocrite. The Happy Hypocrite. This is a tough one.
Was that by Max Beerbohm?
Yep, you got it, Mr. Levant. Now, can you tell us what happened to the Happy Hypocrite in the story by Max Beerbohm?
I put the book down before I finished it. It's wonderful, though.
It is good, yes. I hope Mr. Beerbohm's listening.
Yeah, it's a wonderful book.
It is. Well, we agree on that. Well, the change that takes place in the face of the Happy Hypocrite is this. His sweetheart insists that the man she marries must have the face of a saint who loves dearly, and he's very responsive to her suggestion, and gradually his face changes to resemble a saintly mask that he wears for years. Now will you finish it, Mr. Levant? Or do you think that sort of outfit
No, you entranced me with that. I wish you'd finish it. I don't know any more than that. It's lucky I know Max Beerbohm wrote it.
I think that's pretty good, but not quite good enough. Now, what change in the physical appearance, what change took place in the physical appearance of the heroine, Lo Tsen, who appears in Mr. Hilton's book, Lost Horizon? How about that, Mr. Levant?
Well, she became at least antique, practically petrified, ossified, and her hair was something that you didn't want to run your hands through.
Sounds terrible.
Well, she was the oldest girl, extant. Well,
yes,
she became the last word in aged.
That's right. When did that happen?
When the picture got too long and they wanted to finish
the picture. Yeah, about the 8th year. That's right. But when she leaves Shangri-La, both in the book and the picture, her body withers. And also she dies, if I may add that, Mr. Levant.
She should, the way she looked.
Remember the story of the elephant's child? What took place in the physical appearance of the elephant's child? Remember that? It's a story. Suppose I...
Is that Sambo?
No, it isn't. It's a story by Rudyard Kipling, I think. I think it's a story about how the elephant got his trunk. Well, the crocodile pulled the nose of the elephant's child until the nose, which started as no bigger than a boot, became nearly 5 feet long. We don't seem to have done so well on that one, gentlemen, so that $10 plus the Encyclopedia Britannica go out to Miss Knowles of Waltham, Massachusetts.
Who doesn't need an encyclopedia?
Who doesn't need an encyclopedia? I think we ought to have those encyclopedias sent to the experts this evening. This question, coming from Dr. Charles Brenner of Brookline, Massachusetts, is directed at Mr. Levant. Now, the studio pianist is going to play the left-hand accompaniments to some familiar compositions for the piano. And all Mr. Levant is asked to do is to play the melody. We'll have the first left-hand accompaniment. You'll identify it for us, too, Mr. Levant.
All right,
Mr. Levant.
Give me that first bar, Joe. Let's go.
Yeah, I know, Joe.
The way Dushin plays it, not the way Chopin wrote it.
Go ahead. Very well. And what is the composition, Mr. Levant?
That's the famous Chopin Nocturne, which Eddie Dushin has distorted in the last generation. But it was also used in The Guardsman, you remember?
No, I wouldn't remember.
It became unbearable there, too.
Okay. Now let's have the second one.
Anything. Wait a minute.
Anything won't do on this program, Mr. Levant.
Well, that's an A flat and it's a waltz so far.
Okay. Dope it out.
Localize it, as those doctors say. How many bars of A flat? The Chopin waltz would be. The second bar changes. Is it A flat both bars?
I'm way behind. I've lost the train completely,
right,
Mr. Levant.
But. All right.
Got it?
I'm guessing it could be the only other waltz.
Well, what waltz?
Go ahead, do it.
about it.
Right. Brahms.
Yes, Brahms. The Waltz in A flat.
Bubble dance.
Very good. I gather from the applause of the studio audience, which knows much more about music than I do, that that was a pretty tough trick. Let's have the third.
I don't know. That's kind of a little too cute for me. I don't know what that is.
All right. Want to take a try at it?
Well, it could be a lot of things.
It could be a lot of things.
Yeah, it has no special personality.
Want to have it done again?
I don't know.
All right, let's have it. Yes, let's have the whole thing. Sure. Remember it now, Mr. Levant?
It's, I don't even know the name of it. It's by Mendelssohn.
Yes, I think you know it. I think you're kidding me.
Wait a minute. They only use that in jazz shows.
Sure, the spring song. You know that.
No.
Yes.
Sure it is. Well, that's 2 out of 3, and that's all you will require to get, Mr. Levant. Nice going. The next question comes from Quebec, Canada, and was thought up by Mr. L. Morton. Question about weather. You're asked to recite lines of poetry about these kinds of weather. There are 3 kinds. Snow, fog, and thunder. Can you give me a line of poetry, or 2 lines, about snow, or using the word snow? Mr. Sandberg.
Snow, the beautiful snow.
Did you just make that up?
No, that's a very... it was probably more often reprinted than any other piece of verse in the late 1850s.
Who wrote it?
1860s, I've forgotten who. John Wilkes Booth used to recite it.
Just snow, beautiful. I wonder how they thought all
snow,
that up.
Snow, the snow, the beautiful snow, well, it was filling the earth and the sky below.
Is that right, Mr. Sandberg?
The other way around.
Trust Mr. Adams. Very good. That'll do for snow. And, of course, there's another famous line from the French poet Villon that perhaps all of you recollect. Mr. Adams?
Where are the snows of yesteryear?
Very well said, Mr. Adams. That's
how about
right.
The Luxe Ed, pure as snow?
Yes, that'll do, too, Mr. Levant.
And also there was Phoebe Snow of the Anthracite.
They're getting very far afield. Mm-hmm. I bet a hat, by the way, speaking of snow and rain, that not one of you can give me the quotation that's on the post office about snow and rain on the New York post office. Do you?
Neither rain nor snow, and so forth.
But that's not good enough, Mr. Adams. It's a quotation that...
Can hold these something from there around.
Do you know, Mr. Sandberg, he's making a hash out of it.
Can hold these couriers back. That was all I could say.
Not snow, nor rain, nor heat, nor gloom of night stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed round. It's a quotation, very beautiful, I think, that's continually distorted by people like Mr. Adams, Mr. Sandberg, who only remember parts of it. By the way, do you know the origin of that quotation? Do you know, Mr. Levant?
Did Jim Farley write that?
No. Bet he wish he did. Well, in another form, rather less elegant than that, it comes from the great Greek historian Herodotus. Now, how about fog? Can you give me a line of poetry about fog, or several lines of poetry about fog? Mr. Sandberg?
A little ridiculous.
Not at all. I bet you're thinking of the poem you wrote about fog.
Yes.
Will you let us have it?
And it's a preposterous.
No, it's a good poem. Very good.
The fog comes and catches.
Yes. Tell us a little more about the fog that comes out of the cat seat, Mr. Sandberg.
It sits looking over city and harbor on the silent haunches and then moves on.
Thank you, Mr. Sandberg.
Well, I really have to laugh.
Do you?
I really have to laugh about that thing.
I don't think that's a very good point.
I was trying to get an interview with a judge of a juvenile court in the Cook County Courthouse in Chicago, and I wrote that in about 5 minutes, and now it's an indispensable item in all the anthologies, and I meet every week 5 or 6 people who know only that out of all I've ever written.
That's very irritating.
That's all that they know out of all that I've written, the various.
Boy, I'd settle for that.
I think it was one of the best 5 minutes you ever spent, Mr. Sandberg, in spite of the fact that people don't often know many of the other poems. Mr. Adams.
I know a fog one.
All right, let's have it.
It was in the 4th reader.
Mr. Adams knows all
dusty
the classics.
Dusty and raw was the morning. A fog hung over the seas. When Pablo of San Diego... Rode down on the inland breeze.
See, that's beautiful. That's beautiful, Mr. Adams.
Ever hear that?
I hope your old fourth grade teacher is listening in on you this evening, Mr. Adams. What were you going to say, Mr. LeBlanc?
That's a derivative of being in a fog. Pablo was in a fog.
Thanks for explaining it. How about thunder? Can we get a poem, a line of poetry, Mr. Curie?
Cannon to right of them, cannon to left of them, volley them thunder.
That's a dandy. From Tennyson. Now, Mr. Levant.
How about On the Road to Mandalay?
What's wrong with it?
The dawn broke. I don't know. It's too dramatic. What is it?
Came
up like thunder?
Mm-hmm.
I always leave after that.
The next line is Out of China, across the bay.
That's
I hate
right.
you to leave ignorant. Yes.
And there's Chris Morley's Thunder on the left.
Is that from a line of poetry, Mr.?
No, that's merely the title of it.
But it may be from some...
title of a novel.
Yes, I know, but it may be a quotation from a line of poetry. I don't know.
Well, Thunder Over the Bronx is a novel, too.
Yes, it's a book, not a novel.
Short story.
Well, we're all right on weather. Now, what can we do with this? Mr. M.A. Wilson of San Francisco, California, asks you to use the titles of books or plays or movies or poems and staff an army with officers of three different ranks. For example, The Little Colonel, which is both a book and a movie in which Shirley Temple played, would give us a colonel. Now, you can't use colonel. Let's have three other ranks. Mr. Levant had his hand up first.
Captain Miles Standish.
The courtship of Captain Miles Standish. How about it, Mr. Adams?
No captain.
No. It's the courtship
of Miles
Standish.
Well, I disappointed him, a captain.
Sorry. Mr. Garrett.
Soldiers Three by Rudyard Kipling. That's a start.
Yes, mm-hmm. But soldier is not a rank. Isn't that a general term?
It
would have to be a specific rank, you see, like colonel.
Oh, private, you mean.
Yes, but they weren't called Private Three. Mr. Sandberg, you had your hand up.
Well, Whitman's poem, Captain, My Captain.
Very good, yes. That gives us two captains, really. That's captain. Now let's get two more. Mr. Levant.
The General Dies at Dawn.
Very good, yes. The name of the movie. That gives us a captain and a general. See if we can get another military grade. Mr. Sandberg.
Generals die in bed.
Yes, I'd like to get off the generals for the moment. We can see if we can't get a major or possibly a sergeant.
Sergeant Pledge.
That's not the name of a book, though. Mr. Kieran.
The Case of Sergeant Grisha.
Yes, that's a good one. The Case of Sergeant Grisha, a novel by Stefan Zweig.
No, Arnold Zweig. I'm sorry.
By Arnold Zweig. I beg your pardon. You're quite right. That was Mr. Levant doing the literary critic stint. Mr. Adams?
How about Midshipman Ready?
Nothing wrong with it, except it's naval. Mm. I wanted military ranks. There's the three. Phyllis Batome once wrote a book called what? Remember? Good book. It appeared in the movies, too. Private Worlds, I think it was. By an extension, we can let that in. All
Major
right.
Major Barbara, all right.
Pardon?
Major
right.
Barbara.
Oh, yes. Very good. Major Barbara by George Bernard Shaw. Well, it's time now to check over the cash disbursement. So far, the Stumpers have removed $20 from the Canada Dry kitty. And now the chair recognizes the gentleman from Canada Dry, Mr. Milton Cross.
Thank you. Every week, Mr. Fadiman repeats the true fact that the experts who attempt to answer the information police questions do so spontaneously and without rehearsal. However, the exact opposite is true of the experts who supervise the making of Canada Dry ginger ale. Every minute of the time, they know exactly what's coming next. For Canada Dry has a knowing expert in charge of every step, from the purchasing of the finest ginger in Jamaica to the final action of bottling this delicious beverage. And the result of all this studied preparation and teamwork by the laboratory and bottling experts is the purest and best-tasting ginger ale that money can buy. That's why Canada Dry is the favorite ginger ale in hospitals, hotels, and homes all over the world. Get a supply of Canada Dry as soon as possible. Serve it often in your home so that your family and friends may enjoy ginger ale at its very best.
Mr. Cross, your expert description of the expert's work was delivered in exactly 55 seconds. And now suppose we begin the second half of the program this evening with a very simple question, I think, from Mr. F. Stone of Atlanta, Georgia. Now, you all know it's easy to name flowers with girls' names. I have no doubt you've already thought of Rose, so right in the group this evening. I'll ask you, however, to name five with masculine names or nicknames as part of the flower's name. Let's have at least five. Mr. Kieran, have his hand up first.
Jack in the Pulpit.
Jack in the Pulpit would be a very good one. Mr. Adams had his hand up.
Bachelor's Button.
That would not be the name of a man. It would be the condition of a man rather than the name of a man. We have to have the name. Mr. Sandberg.
Dutchman's Breeches.
Well, I don't think Dutchman is a name. He has to be a name. Mr. Kieran gave us Jack in the Pulpit. Mr. Kieran.
Sweet William.
Sweet William would be another. We have to get three more. Oh, you mustn't let Mr. Kieran, our botanist, do all the work for you. Mr. Sandberg, do you have one? Mr. Adams.
Johnny, jump up.
Is that a flower, Mr. Kieran?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's three.
It's like a type of viola, I believe.
I never heard of
that musical instrument? That gives us three. All we can think of, Mr. Sandberg.
There's a John of My Dreams or John of My Something or other.
Is there really?
Yes.
I don't know. You make it sound very convincing. Would that be right, Mr. Kieran?
What was it?
John of My Dreams.
I don't know it.
I think the poet
John of My
Sandberg.
I'm not it, anyhow.
I know a fellow named Violet, but that's as far as I can go.
Well, I think maybe that's far enough in some cases.
Wait a minute.
Mr. Kieran.
St. John's wood. That's a flower. Very
yes.
common flower.
Very true. We've got a great many Johns, Mr. Kieran. Not very modest of you, as a matter of fact. How about goldenrod? Isn't there a Rod LaRoque in Mr. Levant's motion picture world? Goldenrod
yeah.
would do. Is there something called Wake Robin?
Yes, there is.
Robin.
Trillium.
Robin, yes. Robin is the name of a man.
Frank
Sandberg?
Frankincense?
Gee whiz, I think we'll end on that one. All right. Good enough. The next question comes from Seattle, Washington, from Mr. Eric Fennell. How did the following song characters meet their deaths? Now, you can tell me by singing or by playing, if you wish, or in any way that you wish. Casey Jones, how did he meet his death? Casey Jones. Mr. Kieran.
In a railroad crash.
In a railroad crash. Can you...
Two locomotives gone a bump.
Go ahead, gentlemen. Don't let me interrupt you.
Casey said...
Go ahead, Mr. Kieran.
Just before he died, there's two more roads that I'd like to ride.
What are they, babe?
Why, the Southern Pacific and the... Santa Fe.
The engineer says, what can they be? Pacific and the Santa Fe.
Oh. I'd love to have this colloquy continued. Like to hear these songs again, Mr. Sandberg. Aren't they pretty good? I should tell the radio audience, if you don't already know it, that Mr. Sandberg is really the expert on this sort of thing. He's just been listening to Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran with a sympathetic smile on his face. How did Johnny meet his death? Mr. Levant.
That's Frankie and Johnny, huh?
I guess so. How did Johnny meet?
It was in St. Louis. Shot him in the back.
Yeah. By what kind of a pistol?
I don't know.
Don't know the bore, do you? Mr. Sandberg.
Fool to fool.
That's right, Mr. Sandberg. Thank you very much. And how did Miss Otis meet her death? Miss Otis?
What is that? Miss Otis Presents?
Regret.
No. Oh, Regret.
I think so, Mr. Levant. Do you know?
She was a bore, evidently.
No, I don't think. No. Mr. Adams, don't know that song?
Notice Regrets.
Well, you're supposed to get two out of three on this one. We have gotten two. She was hanged from a willow tree by a mob. A mob came and got and dragged her from the jail, madam. They strung her upon the old willow across the way. And the moment before she died, she lifted her lovely head. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she won't be able to lunch today. Remember that? Two out of three. See what you can do with this one. From James W. Burke of North Amherst, Massachusetts. Name the city from which the following famous travelers started their voyages. The first is Gulliver. Hero of Gulliver's Travels.
The author started from London.
The author started from London?
Yeah.
Now how about Gulliver himself? Started from what port? Matter of fact, he started from two different ports and two different voyages.
Lilliput.
I beg pardon?
Lilliput,
I think not, Mr. Adams.
No, that was his destination.
That was one of his destinations. Mm-hmm. He sailed from Bristol. And in another case, he sailed from Portsmouth. That's one wrong. We're supposed to get two out of three on this. What city did Sinbad start from on his famous voyages? That means Mr. Burke gets $10 plus a set of the encyclopedia. John Bassett of New York City sends in a tricky question involving your knowledge of musical history. Identify each of the following. Who was the first husband of Richard Wagner's second wife, Mr. Levant.
Hans von Bülow.
Yes. And who was his wife?
His wife was Cosima Liszt, originally. Yes. Her father was Liszt. I could say something about her birth, but I won't. But she married von Bülow, who was Wagner's, practically his best friend, who conducted, I think, the first performance of Tristan during all this trouble. That's enough.
Yes, and then Wagner practically stole...
Stole? He didn't even bother.
Yes, he didn't even bother. By the way, have you musical boys stopped talking about that scandal yet? It's always seemed to me one of the most
it's
boring...
It's always good for a bad play, once every 3 years.
Yeah. Who was the second husband of Napoleon's first wife? The second husband of Napoleon's first wife.
It was a daring thing for him to do, whoever it was.
Yeah, it's very easy. This is a simple answer to a very simple question. Mr. Sandberg?
Napoleon.
That's quite right, Mr. Sandberg. Thank you. Napoleon's first wife was Josephine Beauharnais, and she had been married, as you can imagine, to a Mr. Beauharnais before she married Napoleon. Now, I'm going to read you, or rather Mr. H. White of Detroit, Michigan, sends in this one, and he asks you to see if you can answer this. I'm going to read you the lyric of a familiar song. All I'm going to do is ask you to sing the tune. Here's the lyric. The poor working girl, may heaven protect her, she has such an awfully hard time. The rich man's daughter goes haughtily by. My God, do you wonder at crime? Can you sing the tune? Mr. Sandberg? Have to hurry. Sounds good so far, Mr. Sandberg.
The poor working girl, may heaven protect her. She has such an awfully hard time.
All right, very good. Thanks, Mr. Sandberg. I'm sure you could have continued indefinitely. We've paid out $30 and 3 sets of encyclopedias, and now, Mr. Cross.
The smart host and hostess know that attention to details means so much toward the success of entertaining. For example, the club soda you serve may seem a trifling detail, but believe me, the ill-concealed frowns of disapproval when guests taste your offering can be most embarrassing. That's why sparkling Canada Dry water is such an outstanding favorite. The discriminating host and hostess know that this club soda not only points up the flavor of your favorite drink, but Canada Dry's process called pinpoint carbonation means the sparkling goodness will last. The final sip will be just as fresh and lively as the first. That's why, too, you'll find Canada Dry water served at clubs, hotels, restaurants, and wherever fine beverages are sold. So whenever you entertain, remember sparkling Canada Dry water, the club soda that's full of flavor and life, and stays that way. Now, here's Mr. Fadiman.
Thanks, Mr. Sandberg, for coming down this evening. And next week, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams will be with us. And as our guests, Mr. Christopher Morley, the author of the recently published novel Kitty Foyle, and Marquis James, author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning biography of Andrew Jackson and other distinguished works. To our listeners, we say, please send your questions along. If you have a stumper, let's have it. There are $5 in it for you if we use the question. And if you stump the experts, you get another 10 and a complete set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. So you can win this new prize in addition to $15. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Remember, Canada Dry Ginger Ale, Sparkling Water, Tom Collins Mixer, and Lime Ricky come in convenient sizes. Why don't you check your supply right away? The large family size is economical, costing only 15 cents plus bottle deposit. This is Milton Cross saying goodnight for Canada Dry until next week at this time.